You're at the Coaching Inn, 3D Coaching's virtual pub, where we enjoy conversations with people who are engaged in the world of coaching.
Hello and welcome to this week's Coaching Inn. I'm Claire Pedrick, and today it's a pleasure to have with us Rob Wright, who's going to tell us all about his story and what he does now in the world of resilience. Welcome, Rob.
Thanks, Claire. Good to see you.
And you. So tell us a little bit about the journey that got you to this point.
Well, my background has been self-employment, been working for myself for about 30 odd years as a copywriter and a graphic designer. And that kind of work is dependent on understanding how people make decisions. So it's all about communication and helping people to connect with audiences, or companies to connect with their audiences, and to do that they need to understand how people tick and how people make decisions. And so that took me on a journey into psychology and philosophy and human behavior, and I loved that stuff, and I ended up approaching some leadership development consultants based in London and Birmingham and said, would you like a hand with your marketing communications? I thought it'd be a really good fit. Next thing I know, I'm an executive coach, which really accelerated with them. They took me on as an executive coach, leadership development coach. And that really accelerated my fascination with personal development and all of that sort of stuff. And on the back of that, I learned that I had a particular fascination with resilience. But I didn't do much with it. I was still doing the copywriting, the graphic design, and until the pandemic hit, at which point I was doing a lot of work with the public sector. Unfortunately, all of my contacts and my work dried up because everybody was diverted to deal with the pandemic. And so I thought, okay, no money, no income, or what can I do? And I often say that if you want answers, ask questions. So I asked myself the question, okay, as unwelcome as this is, what does this make possible? And I'd always dreamt and thought that I'd be integrating my resilience work in who I am and how I show up in the world, but I'd never found a way to do it. So I thought, well, okay, well, people are probably going to need some idea of how to be more resilient at a time like this in the middle of a pandemic. So why not start a resilience practice? And that's what I did. So with a burst of enthusiasm, I thought, let's call this business Giant Life Skills, largely because our giants don't defeat us because they're too big. They defeat us because they make us feel small. So how can we help people help workers, workplaces and communities to feel bigger on the inside than life is on the outside? So that's the potted history of how I got to where I am today.
Wow, thank you so much to dig into there. Wonder where should we start? You tell me, where should we dig in first?
Well, I'm really interested in, as a resilience practitioner, how people flourish when things are really tough. And that's, I guess, on the back of my own story. So what happened in particular while I was working as a copywriter and a graphic designer, I had a particular client who I'd been working with for about 13 years and doing all sorts of really cool stuff like TV commercials and brochures and videos and whatever else. But it got to the point where there was a bottleneck with some of the work that I was doing, and I had a website and I was trying to finish off for them, some TV commercials, some videos, and my client was a very hands-on kind of guy, didn't really delegate very well. So he was struggling to find time to deal with me as well as deal with his business, which was selling very expensive cars all over the world. So long story short, there was a lot of money involved in wrapping these pieces of work up. About 37, it was a lot of work for me as a solo practitioner, about 37,000. And I was asked, invited to invoice, and we'll get all of this settled and all of the work finished. But unfortunately, the bill was never paid, and I was never given an explanation as to why. And it wasn't easy chasing that money. He had heavy hitting lawyers. I didn't have that kind of welly to be able to contest this debt. And so basically, I had to take it on the chin. And for me at that time, as a solo practitioner, 37K was a bit of a stiff hit to take. I didn't do that well with my suppliers. My reputation with my suppliers tanked. But most importantly, I think my own self-esteem took a hit. And as a result of that, I really didn't get back in the saddle as far as work was concerned for several months after that. I think part of the problem is that when we have something strong happen to us, the temptation is to try and protect ourselves from it. And so I began to tell myself a story about work, that work wasn't safe, that taking risks at work wasn't safe. So all of this is going on underneath the hood, isn't it? It's just happening in our subconscious. And unless we have people like coaches and therapists in our lives to kind of help us to see these kind of hidden narratives and scripts that are running underneath the hood, it's very hard to actually begin to break ourselves out of feeling quite so stuck. Once I finally realized what was happening and why I wasn't as engaged with work as I should have been and could have been, and as this prime breadwinner in our home, I wasn't bringing as much corn as I needed to. So once I understood why that wasn't happening, I began to make some steps towards fixing it. But unfortunately, I didn't get my act together in time. And as a result of that, we lost our home. So that led into a period of social housing and quite a lot of reflection. So this was around 2014 to 2019.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because as you're talking, you're describing one thing. If for people who are self-employed, particularly, or actually people who are employed, one thing that is big but not that big can actually tip over into all sorts of other things.
And I kept telling myself at the time, this isn't that big a deal. There's somebody somewhere on the planet with a 37 million pound problem and would love to have a 37,000 pound problem. So I just need to be that guy. It's really straightforward. And in some senses it is, but you're right. These things are contextual, aren't
Yeah,
they?
and you can't pay your suppliers, and then you can't pay the mortgage, and then you can't pay this, and then boom. Thank you for your honesty.
It's all right.
It matters, doesn't it? Because somebody's listening to this who really gets it.
And I think one of the things that I learned from that time is that when you're feeling that kind of self-consciousness and your self-esteem is taking a hit, there's a risk that you begin to identify with what's happened, that it becomes a part of your identity. And so there's this whole thought leadership around shame and guilt. And guilt is I did something wrong. And in my case, I didn't protect my family from this misadventure. Not that it was foreseeable, it wasn't, but nonetheless, it's my name over the door. The truth is, I didn't protect my family from that. Guilt is something I did something wrong, but shame is I am someone wrong. I've been I, this has defined me in some way. And so, for anybody listening in, I would urge them not to do what I did, because shame wants to keep you hidden. It wants to keep you playing in secret, playing in the shadows. And it also wants to help you to grasp a status. So you're trying to cover your nakedness with this appearance of having your act together and being successful in business. And if you're pretending or masking or playing a game, that leads to a further disconnection and further isolation. And so I would encourage anybody listening in to really think about, really carefully think about being vulnerable and allowing, which is a different thing to being transparent, isn't it? Transparency is letting people see you, but being vulnerable is letting people touch you where it hurts. So I'd really encourage people to consider being incredibly brave and allowing a select few people access to this part of your world that you're tempted to keep hidden and secret. Otherwise, there's a risk that you'll simply prolong this period of disconnection and misalignment with who you are and how you're meant to show up in the world.
As you talk about the difference between transparency and vulnerability, I'm thinking about transparency is that we can put ourselves in a glass tube, can't we? So that we think we're being transparent because we think people can see us, but we still have all of our walls up. It's just that they're see-through. And you're describing in certain safe places, get those walls down.
Can we hold space with one or two people? And again, in the work that I talk about with resilience is not a solo pursuit, it's a communal activity. We need one another to be fully and totally resilient. Can we find ways, hold space where other people have access to our world? And it might be different people for different things. So I might have somebody who has access into my role as a husband and as a father. I might have somebody who has access to my world as an entrepreneur, or and somebody else who has access to my world as a coach. It doesn't need to be one person, but it does need to be people. We do need one another. We do need that connection for if we're going to achieve anything meaningful, really.
Yeah, because it takes a village to raise a child, doesn't it? But it also takes a team to grow a business, even if they're not
Absolutely.
all employed by us,
Yeah. Absolutely.
who we have around us. So you've taken that journey and you've turned it into something beautiful.
We're on our
You're turning it into something
way.
beautiful.
We're on our way. We're well on our way, but it does start on that from that journey within, because when you're going through a tough time, we are often again tempted to try to fill those spaces that we're feeling with things and achievements and significance. And one of the things I learned, and I'm still learning actually, is that we need to chase impact rather than status. When
Wow.
you're feeling vulnerable, when you're feeling like something's not quite right or you're not measuring up, stop chasing the signals and the signifiers that we gather around us to like leaves trying to cover our nakedness.
That really makes me think, Rob, about situations where you are with small business owners who endlessly go to networking meetings and tell you that they're elevator speech and you know they haven't got any work. Because what you're describing there is go out and do something that's going to make a difference rather than telling people what you'd like it to be like. Is that right?
We're buttressing our egos and our self-esteem with signals that suggest that we're doing all right. But again, that misalignment, we feel it. So I often say in the work that I do is that we're not humans. We're not thinking people who feel, we're feeling people who think, and like that our feelings always lead. And we might tell ourselves this script and this narrative that we're doing all right and we're keeping busy, and the illusion of busyness keeps us happy and keeps us on the hamster wheel. But deep down, we really know that something's out of whack. We're not quite measuring up, we're not delivering. And that white noise in the background is something that we feel. And we might not be able to articulate it, and we might not be able to identify it, and we might not even be able to notice it because we're so busy with the illusion of busyness. But it's there, and it hampers our productivity, it hampers our engagement, and it hampers our fulfillment in life. And it doesn't look and feel like flourishing. And that's really what I'm all about. Can we find a way to be completely authentic in the way that we show up in the world, in a way that looks like and feels like flourishing?
So you're describing something there that connects me to the principle that we have in systemic coaching, which is step one, acknowledge what is. So my question for you is, what's the biggest insight that you've had on this journey that you want the world to hear?
Oh my goodness, that's a question. What's the biggest insight? Oh my
Or
word.
the smallest? Or the smallest, most
I
significant one.
think that my favorite insight, if I can answer it that way, is that we are all telling ourselves a story. And we use story all the time to understand how we fit in the world, our place within the world, the world, and who we are. And I think that the work that I do loves to play around the idea of helping individuals, workplaces, and communities to understand the story that they're in, so that they can write a story that they actually want to be in. So I think personally, I think that unless we make, so one of the things I learned, one of the big lessons I learned in my journey is that unless you make peace with your story, you can't write the next chapter. If you don't, otherwise your story will own you.
And the next chapter will be fantasy.
And this next chapter will either be fantasy or will be you trying to escape the story that you don't want to be in. So I one of the things I talk about in the work that I do is the idea of the rear view mirror and the front windscreen. And if we go through something particularly strong, we end up trying to avoid the story that we've just been in. So we're looking over our shoulder or at it all the time, or we're trying to edit it. So we're looking from the retrospectively into the present. We're trying to make the present more, much more comfortable, whereas life needs to be lived from the present to the future. What's the future that we want to create rather than what's the story we want to edit? So the whole idea of story, I think, is a big thing for me. And what kind of role do we want to play in the story that we're writing? Do we want to be a victim? Do we want to be a villain? Do we want to be a hero, or do we want to be a guide? There are all kinds of other story archetypes available, so you might not want to pick one of those four. But the point is, we have agency. We do have choice. And as strong as our stories are, They don't necessarily have to define us or to or dictate how our life turns out from there on in.
And your copywriting work all through your life has also been about story, right?
Exactly. So people have often asked me, how do you get from copywriting or graphic design to resilience coaching? And that's how it makes sense to me. It's all about connecting. So my creative work has all been about connecting audiences and making lasting connections with their audiences, and using story, telling a story that is compelling enough that people will actually want to join you in. And here I am with the resilience work, and it's in this, and yes, some of those insights, many of those insights that I've worked, picked up in my marketing career has found its way into the resilience work as well.
So it's not as much as of a pivot as it sounds.
No, not to me anyway.
Yeah, doesn't sound like a pivot to me. It sounds like you've just taken what's inside you and then the story that's inside you and slightly reconfigured it.
Yeah. And for me, that's what resilience is all about. It's about doing an inventory of your skills and your experience and your talent and your interests and your passions and being creative with it, being resourceful with it. And so you might hear people prefer to talk about resilience in terms of resourcefulness. And I'm comfortable with that. But that's exactly what it is. It's about doing an inventory and making use, playing the cards that you've been dealt
Creatively.
creatively. And we are all creative. There's yeah, we don't necessarily go down that tangent, but that gift is available to all of us in our various ways. And so yeah, how can we reframe and adapt and innovate with what we have?
So you've talked about some really key things. You've talked about agency. Reclaiming our agency in a creative way and the reframing thing. So I'm really interested, Rob, in you now run a you run courses, right, as well as doing coaching. Is that right?
I do facilitation,
Yeah.
so I'll help companies and departments transition, whether it's supporting their staff with well-being, whether it's helping them to reset their vision, whether it's to help people to build teams that are much more high-performing and much more effective. So there's facilitation, that's a big part of the work that I do, but there is also the one-to-one resilience coaching as well.
Yeah. So somewhere along this journey, you've turned everything that was inside you and the story and all the things that have happened into this menu, sounds like, that you're now offering out. How did you do that?
How did I do that? How did I do that? Well, I borrowed some the experiences I had with the leadership development consultants. And so that informed some of the things that I wanted to do. One of the things I talk about in as I reflect back on my last few years doing this is that, like most people in business, when you come up with a big idea that gets you excited, you have this burst of enthusiasm, and then suddenly you have this insight that, hang on. I'm perhaps not as good as this as I thought I might be. This conscious incompetence s suddenly creeps up on you, and so you go through this pit of despair as you straggle around trying to work on your skills and your competencies. And just like everybody else, I had that going into this. You suddenly realize how much you don't know. And at that point, you either quit Or you muddle through. And so to answer your question, I muddled through. I found a way to make my interests and my passions relevant to people at their point of need. And so that's how I solved that problem for me.
Interesting. As you said that, it made me think you quit, you mask, you muddle through, be vulnerable. You do a combination of those things. If we go back to what we said before, because
And
that.
again, and the risk with masking is that your energies are being diverted. So again, one of the things I talk about in the work that I do is resilience is also energy management. And if your energies are being directed into protecting yourself or creating an illusion of something that you're not, then you're misdirecting your energies into which could be used creating something and a story that you actually do want to be in. And so it's really important to identify that and make sure that you're focusing, keeping the main thing, and focusing on your intentions rather than focusing on what you're trying to avoid.
There's a lot of being honest in what you've said so far today.
Well, again, one of the things about going back to story, the strength of every great story is the truth. Will you suspend reality to engage with this story because it resonates, because it's something authentic and real and true and sincere and honest and pure about it? And we all follow our authors and our directors and watch the films and the programs we enjoy because of that connection with the truth. We see something in it that resonates. So I have a story framework that I use, and the first part of it is what is true when you are faced with an inciting incident that's really strong, that threatens to knock you sideways. What is going on here? What's at stake here? What is true? Why is this so impactful for you? And what does it mean? And if you're not unable to handle that truth, the chances are you'll do what we've been talking about already. That's deflecting and masking and procrastinating and keeping things hidden rather than stepping into the challenge. So one of the things I invite people to consider when they're tempted to withdraw from something that is really strong, because that's what we often want to do. I ask them to think about a story that I think is really, really helpful. It's a true story. It belongs to a chap called F.W. Borum. He's an old Baptist minister. He lived in the junction of the 19th and 20th centuries. And we know this story is true because we've got his journals.
Oh, wow.
In it, he just writes an entry. He's a Baptist minister. He's British. He's on mission in New Zealand. He's just out for a walk, and he's walking along. Sees a wall. Looks over the wall, and over the wall is a kitchen garden. And he tells us in his journal that he sees a scarecrow standing in this kitchen garden, and funnily enough, there's a bird sitting on one arm of this. Of the scarecrow, and then another bird sitting on the other arm. And of course, this tickles him because scarecrows are supposed to be scary and birds are supposed to be scared of scarecrows. But in a flash of inspiration, he tells himself, I'm going to call that bird the foolish bird. I'm not going to call that bird the wise bird. And if I was a foolish bird, I'd fly around, see a scarecrow, listen to my fears, and I'd fly away. But if I was a wise bird, I'd fly around looking for scarecrows because I would know that despite my fears, there'd be treasure waiting for me hidden in the field.
Wow.
So one of the things I often encourage people to consider when they're feeling that sense of high alarm because something strong has just happened to them is to consider leaning into it rather than withdrawing from it. To
That
find,
story
yeah.
illustrates that in such an extraordinary way, doesn't it? Because I've never thought about the fact that, of course, there are goodies in a field with scarecrow in. But of course there are. Otherwise, it wouldn't be there, would it?
There are. And scientists talk about post-traumatic growth and whatever else. Truth is, as unwelcome as some of the things that we go through are, there is the possibility of reward. There is the possibility of growth. There is the possibility of wisdom and insight that comes from failure or
Yeah.
from regret or from misadventure, or even calamity. There's a possibility of finding something of value. Do we have, can we have the courage to step into it as carefully, gingerly, but stepping into it nonetheless, rather than doing what we often want to do and reducing our lives to the rear view mirror rather than the front windscreen, which is much more expansive and much more future oriented. We reduce our world to this retrospective view of life, and we shrink to fit. And like I've said before, our giants don't defeat us because they're too big. They defeat us because they make us feel small. And the task of any body who wants to practice resilience is how can I begin to feel bigger on the inside than life is on the outside? What are the skills that I'm going to need to be able to make that happen?
Getting ourselves back to being the right size.
Yeah, or the right size. Yes, I think that, I think that's it. It's about making sure that we take up enough space. So we touched on holding space earlier. And you touched on humility in your book, the idea of not taking up enough space means that we're playing small, or the idea of taking up too much space means that our egos get in the way and we're smothering other people's opportunities. But the idea of being earth, of being ourselves, our authentic selves, and taking up in the space that we're supposed to occupy with our talents and our skills and our ideas and our opinions, rather than shrinking back and hiding or playing small.
And last time we spoke, I wrote a little note in the chapter on humility. And it said, Rob Wright says, pride is taking up too much space and timidity is taking up too little space.
Absolutely.
I've shared that with some people. Rob Wright says this.
Has it been
So,
helpful?
Rob, yeah. But
Excellent.
I always love in my books that by the time that book comes out, it's covered in scribbles because the more insights have emerged from
Yeah,
conversations like
I
this.
love that too. I love that too. But it's also one of the reasons why people are afraid to write books because
Yeah.
they think they need to be definitive
Can I
rather
tell you
than
the funniest thing
conversation
about
piece.
this?
Please
So,
do.
in simplifying coaching, all of the annotations are in pencil. So there are pages and pages and pages where I've written in the margin, but it's all in pencil. Suddenly, in the human behind the coach, I've had the confidence to write the annotations in ink. I'm not sure what that means, and it might be because I now have a really nice pen, but I wonder whether there's something else in there. I do
About
have a
being
nice pen.
content with a evolving conversation.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. So your comment is in ink, just so you know. So, how do people get in touch with you if they want to talk more about your individual work or your work in organizations, Rob?
I have a the main name, giantlifeskills.com. It points to a LinkedIn page
Great.
and they can get my details from there. So giantlifeskills.com.
Dot com. Thank you, Rob, for coming to the Coaching Inn. What an absolute delight to talk to you.
It's been a pleasure, Claire. Thanks so much for inviting me on.
And everybody, thank you for listening. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, we'd love you to share the podcast with a friend or leave a comment on social media. And if you'd like to become a regular at the Coaching Inn, you can subscribe on Podbean and all major podcast channels. We look forward to welcoming you next time. You've been listening to The Coaching Inn, 3D Coaching's virtual pub. For more information, check out 3dcoaching.com.